And for example, for the fact of coding Montaigne in order to begin, in place of and before saying anything else. And by holding me personally responsible, you are, in a rigorous sense, implying some knowledge of what person and responsibility mean. What is happening at this very moment? This could give rise to a description of a pragmatic type. Such a description would confirm that, having been invited, but how and exactly by whom, finally, having been invited by people, by an institution, and so on, but this is very indeterminate, having been invited to speak to you when you are assembled to listen to me, then to discuss with me, in short, to respond to me, I have already responded to an invitation, and consequently, I am in the process of addressing myself to you who are beginning to respond to me. You are doing so in a way which is still virtual with respect to the content of the response, but you are already doing so actually with respect to that first response constituted by the attention given, or at least promised, to a discourse. You should note in passing that with this distinction between virtuality, potentiality, and actuality, with this distinction, I am already virtually installed in the dominant code, in the very constitution of one of the great canonical discourses of philosophy and friendship. And my topic here, and this will, I hope, become more clearer and clearer as I advance, as I go on. The question is, what is a canonical discourse? And on the example of a canonical philosophical discourse on friendship. I am so virtually installed with this distinction between potentiality and act in the dominant code of the great, of one of the great canonical discourses of philosophy on friendship, the very one which Montaigne was quoting Aristotle's, the distinction between dynamis and energeia, that is, potentiality and act. This distinction is never far away in the Nicomachean Ethics, when the issue is the distinction between, I quote, the good men who are friends in the rigorous sense of the term, and the others who are so only accidentally and by analogy with the first. Or between, on the one hand, the protephilia, the first friendship of the Eudemian Ethics, or the teleia philia, the perfect achieved friendship of the Nicomachean Ethics. And on the other hand, the other friendships founded on usefulness, the political friendship, or pleasure for the young people. Or again, after having defined the three forms of government, Aristotle declares that, I quote, friendship appears there in the same proportion as justice. Or, if man is a political being, as he says, political friendship is only a kind of friendship, that which he calls concord, homonomia. We should reconstitute these sequences. So you are already holding me responsible for what I say, for the simple fact that I am speaking, even if I am not yet assuming the responsibility of the sentence I am citing and even analyzing. Let us suppose, just an hypothesis, concesso non dato. Let us suppose that one can translate these Greek words, philia, homonomia, today by friendship, Freundschaft, amitié. And everything, I think this will become clear, everything will here depend upon thinking the possibility of this translation and thinking thought as thought of the same or as thought of the other in terms of the possibility of this transfer or this train or this streetcar named Philia, Freundschaft, Amitié, Friendship. A translation which is already problematic in the Greek language itself. Within the Greek language, the translation is a problem, and Aristotle knew it better than anyone. The Greek language had to, in fact, have recourse to the same word, philia, for different and derived meanings, which were inadequate for philia prote and teleia philia. For instance, the friendship founded on usefulness or pleasure are friendships, so he uses the same word, but the same word doesn't refer to the same concept. But it's not simply the choice of the word is not simply arbitrary. So Aristotle's discourse is a very complex reflection on the translation within the same word of different concepts. So Aristotle's whole discourse on philia is a discourse on language, on the word philia, its uses, its contexts, its regulated equivocality, its legitimate or its abusive translations. Even supposing one could translate these words without anything being left over in our languages, I still do not know if what exists between us here is philia or homonomia, for instance, nor how one should distinguish here among us, among each one of us, who together would compose this as yet quite indeterminate us. But perhaps you will concede the following, which is something like the first result of a practical demonstration, the one that has just taken place. Before even having taken responsibility in our name or in each of our names for any given affirmation, we are already caught up in a kind of asymmetrical and heteronomical curvature of the social space. More precisely, in the relation to the other prior to any organized socius, sociality, to any determined government, to any law. And please note, prior to any determined law, as either natural law or positive law, but not prior to any law in general. This heteronomical and asymmetrical curvature of a sort of originary society, so sociality, is a law and perhaps the very essence of the law. What is taking place at this moment, the disquieting experience we're having, is perhaps just the silent unfolding of that strange violence which has since forever insinuated itself into the origin of the most innocent experience of friendship or justice. We have begun to respond. We are already caught, or surprised, I would say in French, pris, surpris, in a certain responsibility, and the most ineluctable of responsibilities, as if it were possible. That's my problem. That's our problem here. As if it were possible to conceive a responsibility without freedom, which for a classical philosopher is simply a stupidity. As if it were possible to conceive a responsibility without freedom. We are invested with an undeniable responsibility at the moment we begin to signify something. But where does that begin? This responsibility assigns us our freedom without leaving it with us, if one could put it that way. It assigns us our freedom without leaving it with us. And we see it coming from the other. It is assigned to us by the other, from the other, before any hope of reappropriation permits us to assume this responsibility in the space of what could be called autonomy. This experience is even the one in which the other appears as such, that is, appears without appearing. I insisted on this strange structure in the text on Levinas and violence and metaphysics. The fact that the other appears as such, that the other cannot appear as such. That is, he or she appears as such in not appearing. There is no as such structure for the other, which means that there is no pure phenomenology of the other. And that's why Husserl's met so many difficulties in dealing with the other. So that which comes before autonomy must then also exceed it, exceed the autonomy, that is, succeed it and survive it, and indefinitely surpass it. In general, when dealing with the law, with the nomos, one believes one can simply oppose autonomy and heteronomy. Perhaps one would have to deform this oppositional logic and prepare from very far away its political translation. To sum it up in one word, and because it's good for reasons of clarity during the lecture to anticipate in a number of ways and to announce a focal point, it is a question of a political translation whose risks and difficulties, whose aporias even, one could hardly exaggerate. After having foregrounded a scansion in a kind of history of friendship, a scansion which would have introduced asymmetry, separation, and infinite distance into a Greek philia, which did not tolerate them, I would like to suggest that a democracy still to come, and not yet given, not yet thought, even one still suppressed or repressed, such a democracy to come, still to come, such a democracy not only would not contradict this asymmetrical curve and this infinite heterogeneity, but in truth would be called forth by them. This asymmetry and infinite alterity would not only not bear any relationship to what Aristotle would have called inequality or superiority, but they would be incompatible. This asymmetry and this infinite alterity, not only they would not bear any relationship to Aristotle's inequality or superiority, but they would be incompatible with any socio-political hierarchy as such. And later on, it will appear that beyond a certain determination of justice and calculation of measure and metrics, but not of justice in general, this democracy to come, still to come, would free a certain interpretation of equality from what I will call, define as, on Wednesday, the phallogocentric schema of fraternity, which I will attempt to show has been determining and dominant in our traditional concept of friendship. Brotherhood, fraternity. A democracy which wouldn't be grounded on the scheme of the brother. In what sense could one still talk of equality, even of symmetry, within the asymmetry and measurelessness of infinite alterity? What right would we have to still talk of politics, of right and of democracy. Do these words have to totally change their meaning, allow themselves to be translated? And what then will be the rule governing this translation? I was talking just now of an excessive assignation of responsibility. What can this excessive assignation of responsibility have to do with that which is called friendship? And I say advisedly, that which is called friendship, and I underscore this precaution, and it resembles, once again, a quotation, as if I were forcing myself to remember unceasingly that before knowing what friendship is and what we mean to say here and now with this word, we should first deal with a certain use of the word friendship. We should mention these uses as well as the interpretations and experiences, for experiences are also interpretations, the interpretations and experiences which friendship has occasioned. But we should not forget that we are speaking, first of all, from within the tradition of a certain concept of friendship, within a given culture, let us say ours, in any case, the one on the basis of which a certain we, us, here tries its luck. Now, neither this tradition nor the concept of friendship within it is homogeneous. Our principal concern will even be to recognize the major marks of a tension within it, perhaps even ruptures, and in any case, scansions. Let us listen once again to Montaigne, listening to Diogenes, listening to Aristotle, etc. But let us translate and interpret him as well. Oh, my friend, there is no friend. The painful and plaintive irony of the address also states the certitude of a strange affirmation. The phrase springs forth like a sort of apostrophe. In effect, someone, that's the apostrophe structure, in effect, someone is turning towards his friends. Oh, my friends. But the apostrophe carries within it a predicative proposition. It envelops an indicative declaration. Ascertaining a fact, it also utters a general truth. There is no friend. The general truth of the fact would seem to contradict by an act the very possibility of the apostrophe. The possibility for it to be serious. If there are no friends, how could I call you my friends? And if I call you my friends, how can I say there are no friends, etc.? There must indeed be friends in order for me to address myself to them in this way, if only so as to say to them, there is no friend. So the performative contradiction would be as vivid and present as a simple logical absurdity. In the best of cases, it would be the playful exercise of a paradox. If the structures of the two utterances, oh my friend, there is no friend, if the structures of the two utterances were symmetrical, and if they belonged to a presently homogeneous ensemble. This is not necessarily the case. The apostrophe, whose form surpasses and comprises in itself the alleged determination of fact, resembles at once and the same time an act of recalling and an appeal, un rappel, I would say in French, et un appel. It resembles an appeal because it makes a sign toward the future. Be my friends, for I love you or will love you, And friendship consists rather in loving than in being loved, a proposition which we have not yet finished meditating. So listen to me, be sensitive to my cry, understand and be compassionate. I'm asking for sympathy and consensus. Become the friends to whom I aspire. Accede to what is at the same time a desire, a request, and a promise. And what could also add? A prayer. A prayer. And let us not forget what Aristotle said about prayer, euche. Euche, prayer, he says, is a discourse, logos. But it is a discourse that, somewhat in the manner of a performative, is neither true nor false. Al ute aletes ute pseudes. So, there are no friends that we know, but I beg you, make it so that there will be friends from now on. What is more, how could I be your friend and declare my friendship for you, and the latter consists more in loving than in being loved, if friendship did not remain something yet to happen, to be desired, to be promised? How could I give you my friendship where friendship would not be lacking, promised then lacking? That is, if it already existed. More precisely, if the friend were not lacking. For the apostrophe does not say there is no friendship, but rather there is no friend. And perhaps this is because we have an idea of friendship and what it should be in the ideality of its essence or telos, teleia philia. And thus, in the name of friendship, we must conclude, alas, that if there is friendship, there is no friend. And this is just what Montaigne means to say in the context determined by the most thematic of his intentions, which dominate the passage up to a certain point. It is while thinking about what he calls common friendships, or ordinary and customary ones, that we are obliged to sigh with regret. There is no excellent friendship. These common friendships, he says, are not the most perfect of their kind. That's why there is no friend. But if there is no friend at present, then precisely let us make it so that there will be friendships from now on, friendships that are the most perfect of their kind. Here is what I'm calling you to experience, to answer me. It is our responsibility. Friendship is never a given in the present. It's not a present in the sense of being given. It belongs to the experience of waiting, of promise, or of commitment. Its discourse is that of responsibility or prayer, and at issue there is that which responsibility opens to the future. But the apostrophe, O my friends, turns also toward the past. It recalls, it makes a sign toward that which must be supposed, so as to let oneself be understood, if only in the non-apophantic form of a prayer. You have, I'm just paraphrasing here, you have already, paraphrasing no, but just describing the implications, you have already shown me this minimal friendship, this preliminary consent, without which you would not understand me. You would not listen to my appeal or be sensitive to what is hopeful in my cry. Without this absolute past, I could not, for my part, have addressed myself to you in this way. We would not be together in a sort of minimal community, but one which is also incommensurable with any other. The minimal community speaking the same language or praying for translation within the horizon of the same language, even were it so as to manifest a disagreement. if a sort of friendship had not already been sealed before any other contract. A friendship prior to friendships, an ineffaceable, fundamental, and bottomless friendship, the one which draws its breath in the sharing of a language, past or to come, never present, and in the being together, which any allocution supposes, including a declaration of war. Will one say, in a rather Aristotelian move, that this friendship, the one I'm alluding to now, has merely an accidental and analogical relation or potential relation with friendship in the strict or proper sense, or with the friendship which is, I quote Montaigne, perfect of its kind? The question thus becomes, what is friendship in the proper sense? Is it ever present? What is presence for this filia prote, or for this teleia filia, whose aporia we looked at briefly just now? Or what is the essence of friendship? I will conclude with this question. If we are not close to answering this question, it is not only because of the very great number of philosophical difficulties still in front of us, and which we are going to try to approach in a preliminary and principal manner, at the same time simple and abyssal. If we are not close to answering this question, it is because the question, what is, tī estin, that is the question of essence or truth, has unfolded itself as the question of philosophy on the basis of a certain experience of philia and philein. The question tī esti, what is the essence, what is the presence, what is the existence, what is the presence of the present, cannot be simply applied to friendship as to an example of it, because, that will be my first point on Wednesday, because this question TST has unfolded itself on the basis of a certain experience of philein and philia. The question, what is, presupposes friendship. Thank you.
Well, as Jacques Derrida has mentioned several times, he will continue with the politics of friendship on Wednesday at 4:30 in Ives 110, which is at the other end of the hall. On Wednesday, there will be time for a beginning of discussion with questions and answers, but then for a more sustained discussion with a much smaller group, we hope. We will convene on Friday afternoon at 1:30 in the AD White House. Some of the texts that Jacques Derrida has referred to this afternoon are on friendship, excerpts from the Nicomachean Ethics and the Eudemian Ethics, Nietzsche passage, a passage from Kant, etc., are available in a Xerox packet that's been deposited at KC Copy in College Town, if anyone wants to read those texts before the Friday discussion. Thank you very much.
There is also a translation of Carl Schmitt's Concept of the Political, so small book.
Oh, thank you very much. So until Wednesday, then. Oh, there is a brief reception at the AD White House right now as well.